The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm your host, Benjamin Shapiro, and today we're going to discuss the future of how we work. Joining us is Drew Moffitt, who is the head of marketing at Kumo Space, which is a unified communications platform for remote and distributed team that puts all of your people and their communications into one place. Yesterday, Drew and I talked about leveraging AI to scale content marketing, and today we're going to continue the conversation talking about how influencer marketing and SEO can be offensive tools. All right, here's the second part of my conversation with Drew Moffitt, the head of marketing at Kumo Space. Drew, welcome back to the MarTech Podcast.
Thank you for having me again.
Excited to have you back on the show. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about what Kumo Space is. You've got these innovative digital offices and a lot about your marketing strategy, where you're using artificial intelligence to create content at scale. You're also using a lot of influencer marketing instead of performance marketing to get longer, deeper impressions instead of relying on the sort of snapshot type of ads. Brilliant for a brand that is doing category creation for a product that most people haven't heard of. So today I want to get down into a little bit more of the weeds and talk about how you think of influencer marketing and that SEO strategy you mentioned yesterday as offensive tools. What do you mean by offensive tools and how are they helping build the brand?
Marketing, from my point of view, is very much like a contact sport. You are not only trying to acquire customers, but there is a component to the work that you're doing, which might entail trying to take customers from competitors. So yesterday, I used Coca-Cola as an example. So it's like Coca-Cola is actively trying to take people drinking Pepsi to their brand, and Pepsi's trying to do the same. So that's where I describe it, and I think about it as this offensive tool. Like, how do you go down the field and actually do it, not just be there as a business that is marketing your product, but actively try to beat your competitor?
I understand that in SEO. I've always said SEO is a zero-sum game. You are competing not only with your direct competitors, but anybody that's creating content targeting the same keywords for placement. There can only be one number one. There can only be 10 spots on the first page. And for you to be one of those 10 spots, you have to bump somebody else. I understand how that's competitive. Talk to me about influencer marketing. That seems like, I don't know, more of an art project than it is. Trying to use a high school metaphor here.
Yeah.
Drama is not competitive. I guess we're all competing to be the lead of the play, but roll with me here. How is influencer marketing offensive and that competitive?
So I think influencer marketing in its own right is not particularly an offensive tool. You use the drama class analogy in high school, and I think that's very astute, right? The people that we're working with are great at creating content, far better than I at making a short form video. And that's a very artful, creative process. I think the way that it fits in is at the higher level of that strategy. So as a startup, you are competing for a couple of things. You are firstly competing for funding. There's no particular order here. I'm just naming them. You're competing for funding. You're competing for the type of funding. You're competing for customers. And ultimately, you're competing to get the most revenue. And in our case, and in pretty much most tech companies' cases that are non-hardware products, there has been a winner-take-all or a few winners-take-all kind of outcome to that space. So if you think about going to find something on the internet, 20 years ago, people would have said, go to an internet search engine. But today, the way that you think of that is to go to Google. And you're going to say, hey, why don't you just Google that? Even if that means that you maybe you're using Bing. So for us, it's like, if we can just do a better job on the channels that work for us, in this case, being more creative channel that is influencer marketing, we are just consuming more of that Instagram or TikTok feed. It's not as clear cut as the SEO where, yes, there's only 10 results on the page. And I often kind of joke that it's like waging trench warfare and search engine result pages. But there is only so much time that the eyeball can consume. So the more that we're in those feeds versus competitors in those feeds helps us put us in the best position to acquire the most customers and ultimately have the most revenue and hopefully become the word that is described when people are going to a virtual office or a virtual workspace. It's not that you're going into your virtual office. It's like, oh, I'm in Kumo.
It's interesting. I never really thought about startups this way. And let's have this as a healthy debate. You know, I understand when you're working at a sort of enterprise scale, mature business, winner takes all. Google versus Bing for market share in search. People are going to pick Google or Bing. But in the early days where search engines were being proliferated, a big part of that was just product market fit, right? Like when you're a startup, is it really that competitive? I get you're competing for attention from VCs, you're competing for attention for prospective employees, but a lot of it is you're just trying to validate that your customers are interested in your product. You're trying to find product market fit. Is it zero sum, winner takes all for startup marketers, or is it just about proving your point that it can work?
All of what you're saying is quite accurate or a good interpretation of it with regards to the enterprise side. I think at the early stage, sometimes the best company or the best people don't always win out. There are more pieces to the startup puzzle. Like as much as we might want to assume that capitalism is perfect and it always is going to apply the capital to the best product market fit product or the best solution that's going to get the most productivity. At the end of the day, we all are humans. And I'll use Lyft and Uber as a good example here, right? They both had product market fit. They both had a pretty simple business in hindsight. You think about it, it's like take a GPS location on a device, one device, and send it to another device. And we're going to charge you some money attached to that. But Travis was just exceptional at seeing problems or thinking everything was a wall. It was ultimately his downfall and being able to run through that wall. And that was especially true in his ability to raise venture capital. So when you're an early stage company, a lot of early stage companies are not yet profitable. You need to be good at raising capital. So that's, I think, a lot of what is less talked about, right? We like to say Google won because Google was the best. And I definitely think that Google is the best search engine. And I definitely think that at the time, though I was a quite young person, they were doing a better job. They were truly trying to prioritize results as a product market fit versus making money early on. But the co-founders of Google were just good at talking to venture capitalists and bonding with them. And that gave them enough money to truly execute on that vision of Google is going to serve you the best result, and we're not going to prioritize profiting on it. Yes, the Google that we look at today, you can have four or five ads on the page. But the Google in 2000 or 1999, I feel like it didn't even really have any ads way back then. I mean, it was one or two. So you need to be able to win in these other ways. And I think venture capitalists are drawn to founders, but they're also drawn to stories. And if you are the startup that is, when they Google a term and you're the first result, and when they go into their TikTok feed and they see you as someone talking about your product, and they go to a startup or a tech conference and they see your founder on stage, that's where the best money, meaning the most respected or the most sought after venture capital firms, the Andreessens, Sequoias, Lightspeed, which is our investor, then you're getting that capital. And it's a little bit of a success breeds success.
A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Time for a one-minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on two channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview. So talk to me through the marketing strategy when you're thinking of early stage marketing as a little bit of a competitive sport. And part of it is to not only get the attention of your customers, but also the attention of the venture community, prospective employees, all the people that go into getting to that next stage. What are some of the common marketing tactics that you use to try to prop yourself up to appear to be large, successful, established, credible? Like, how do you build that ethos behind your brand when you're really just getting started and trying to figure it out for yourself?
It's quite hard. As a brand, you don't come out of the gate knowing what your brand looks like. So your brand is getting developed. So it's tough. You, in an ideal world, as a startup at the very start of your journey, you would have this really established brand. But the thing is a company that's that early stage that has a really established brand, you don't know enough about your customer to even know how's your brand going to relate to that customer. So it's sort of this, your brand's always evolving. The good thing about SEO and the way that we're using AI and content is that that's a pretty homogenous environment. There isn't too much brand that you can necessarily need to lean on in a search engine result page. So that inherently is a good tactic for us. As your brand evolves and changes, you can go back and edit and alter that content and change the tone and add more strong viewpoints on topics or how you view the world. It's a little harder with the influencer stuff because we particularly outsource the creative aspect to the creator, right? We say that they're the best at doing that. So you figure out how to incorporate our product versus just plugging our product. It's hard to control the brand in that world. So I think as you move forward as a company, your content that you're creating with those creators is going to change, but the legacy content's still going to live. And ours, we have tons of views on this legacy content and it still drives us traffic. But I think the last piece is you really want to start figuring out how to get your founders as a marketer in front of people. Get them comfortable talking on podcasts, get them comfortable talking on TV, get them comfortable speaking on stage. Because that starts to build a personality, and that personality and that public perception of that personality starts to shape the brand. So for us, those are the three channels that we largely rely on. I would say for any startup or business or marketer listening to this, it's like find the channels that work for you and have a strategy about which part of that plan to be the winner in your space, which piece is playing in that larger puzzle.
You know, often as marketers, we think about brand awareness. We don't really think or measure brand credibility. And to me, that's really what this episode is about. When you're thinking about building a brand, it's not necessarily just the volume of awareness. It's do you have credibility, mostly at the early stage, with the people that matter the most? Sometimes it's not about volume. Sometimes it's about impact. when you're an early stage company and you've got a multi-front war on your hands where you have to attract customers, and on the backside, you have to attract venture capitalists to be able to continue to fund your growth, you need not only to find a marketing channel that drives user awareness and trials and adoptions and conversions and revenue and profit, but you also need to appear to be credible in the eyes of the venture capital community. So sometimes your marketing channel and your mix isn't always as simple as dollars in, dollars out. Sometimes it's dollars in perceived value. And that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks for listening to my conversation with Drew Moffitt, head of marketing at Kumo Space. If you'd like to get in touch with Drew, you could find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you could visit his company's website, which is kumospace.com, KUMOSPACE.com. And on Kumo Space, if you decide that you'd like to take a demo to see what a virtual office space looks like, you can see Drew in his native digital habitat. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and you can even apply to be a guest speaker on the MarTech Podcast. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MARTECHPOD, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or you can contact me directly on LinkedIn. My handle is Ben J. Schaap, BenJShap. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a daily stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, an I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iheareverything.com.